This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right. On a beautiful day in the valley, 73 degrees, someone told me.
Well, I would say that's probably close to the truth. Not 78, though.
What is this 78 thing?
Well, that's what I heard you guys predict.
Oh, I got
you
now.
You
guys
kept saying, 78 tomorrow. Yeah, it's going to be 78 degrees. Oh, I'm looking, I'm going, hey, I like 73. Ain't nothing wrong with 73.
Yeah.
78, yeah, it's pushing 80, man.
That still feels good.
Yeah, it's all right, but it's still March.
Yeah.
You know, 80 in March means 148 in June, you know? That's not what I want.
Well, thanks for the pansies. He brought in a whole bunch of them today.
Yeah, well, it's Easter week, and I thought, you know, I've got lots of them pansies at the nursery, so I gave every lady in the joint a pansy.
Mm-hmm.
And
some of the guys wanted them.
Well, I asked one guy, he says, no thanks. I said, okay, no.
Was that Kyle?
No, I'm going to give Kyle one on the way out and tell him it's for his wife.
Sorry, Kyle. I'm just joking.
I hope you're listening, Kyle. I hope you're listening. Well, anyway, thank you for listening out there in Radio Land. I hope you're gearing up to go plant a garden or prune some bushes or plant a lawn or do something outside because it's a perfect day to do something outside. And if I can help you and you have a question, all you have to do is call 673-4464. 673-4464.
Easy number to remember.
Easy. I even remember it every time.
Yeah.
And even if I'm talking about giant sequoias in the Pacific Islands, you can.
Or China.
In China or somewhere. You can interrupt and ask your question, whether it's your lawn or your garden or your trees or whatever. And I will break my train of thought and get right to your question. So this show is about ideas and instruction, ideas on, hey, how do I make my place prettier? How do I make my place more functional? How do I make my backyard a private sanctuary that I can sit and stay away from the rest of the world when I come home in the afternoon, you know? And that's what the show is all about. It's ideas. I've been on here a long time. I always got a lot of ideas. And if you need some help in the idea arena, I can help you with that as well. So anyway, I've got several different subjects here I'm going to chat about today. And for those folks who haven't heard of the Wooden Shoe Tulip Festival, it's an annual festival held every year in Woodburn, Oregon.
Mm.
Yeah. And, of course, the dreaded COVID monster forced the 2020 event not to happen. But this year, it is on, and they're ready to go, and they're gearing up for it. It's one of the it's one of Oregon's most popular events as far as flowers and things like that go, and because it's early on. And it's going, it actually started in this month, in March, and so it's in progress right now, but there's not too much in bloom. And as I'm talking here, I believe it goes to May 2nd. That's when it ends. So you've got all of April to go up there and take a look at it. And the peak blooming time for all these guys, tulips, are about mid-April, according to what I read. And but there's always, you know, late bloomers that are around that you can see if you kind of, you know, get on the tail end of it and say, well, where's all the blooms, man? Well, they've been there and done that and gone away. So
they're done.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure this is the place, if you're driving on I-5, you can look from I-5 and see all these tulips in bloom, you know, as you go on.
Wow.
75 miles an hour by the place or whatever.
There'd have to be a lot of them if you can see them at that speed.
Yeah, I think so. Either that or I'm confused with another flower place, but I believe that's it. And this festival, and they call it a festival, it draws about 150,000 visitors from around the world every year. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they come from, they said they come from Australia, London, England, all over the world. They come to see this thing. I mean, okay, I don't know if they're going to get there on an airplane this year. But
on a slow boat from China.
Yeah, a slow boat from China or something like that. But the festival, it's just huge. And 150,000 people is amazing.
That's a good cap crowd. Yeah,
and there may be larger crowds this year because of, you know, the 2021 was canceled because of the COVID thingy. But not only is there 40 acres of tulips to explore. Imagine 40 acres. I mean, that's like you know, a quarter mile this way and a quarter mile that way, I think. And they're all full of tulips, and they're all blooming. But they also have a lot of other agricultural products, such as wine grapes. They have a big vineyard thing, and then they grow industrial hemp.
Oh.
And whatever, I don't know if they make ropes or boats out of it, but it's industrial.
Oh, it must
hemp.
Be ropes.
I don't think it's a smoking variety. But it's called Iverson Farms.
Oh, okay.
And it's just a neat place. And they also have other cool things, like they have hot air balloon rides and trips around the property. I don't know if they extend that out over the entire Willamette Valley, but I wasn't sure of that. And then they have hay wagon rides and lots of food. They got lots and lots of food.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And if you like flowers, you like blooms, and you want to learn something, that would be something that you'd want to stick away and say, hey, I'm going to go up there and check this dude out.
You can do a little tiptoeing through the tulips.
Yeah, there you go. Go barefoot. But it's a great event if you'd like to see thousands and thousands of tulips in bloom. I think they said hundreds of thousands in the literature that I was reading, but I'm not quite positive about that. Mm. Okay, so now we'll flip the page and go to something that's not as exotic, of course.
Okay.
This is the season for the weed crop to make its debut.
Oh, of course, yeah.
I mean, they're all over the place right now. And you can't ignore them, so you might as well jump on them right now, get them when they're little, and keep your labor and effort to a minimum. There's several ways to, get rid of them, really. The old-fashioned picking on your hands and knees is, of course, good exercise, and it'll keep you busy for hours and hours and hours. But, you know,
ouch.
And it'll give you time to think about a better, quicker way to get rid of the varmints. and it just so happens I have a few examples that will help you. What, do we have a call?
We have one.
Well, okay, good. Let's have a call.
All righty. Caller, you're on the air.
Okay, great. I got a couple of questions. One, I have some ever-bearing strawberries, and when is a good time to fertilize them, and what type?
Well, let's see. The fertilizer should be a vegetable-type fertilizer. It'll say, you know, vegetable fertilizer right on the package, and it will be a low-nitrogen, high-phosphorus, high-potassium formula. In other words, they don't need a lot of nitrogen, especially strawberries, but the phosphorus and the potassium, they encourage strong root growth and fruit bearing, so that's why I recommend that. And you can do a little bit. Pardon me.
Huh? So what numbers would that be?
Oh, there's a lot of numbers, but let's say 0, 0, 10, 10 or 0, 5, 10 or something like that. The first number is always nitrogen, and then the second one is phosphorus, and the third one is potassium. Fertilizer package.
What time of year?
Well, you could do a little bit of it now. Just don't overdo it. A little bit goes a long way. So as they're starting to pick up steam right now because of the weather. And so you go very minimal, and then maybe in another couple of weeks, very minimal again. And just watch them and see it. If they look healthy and they're growing like gangbusters, leave them alone. But don't overdo it. Be real, real stingy with your fertilizer on those guys.
Okay, just kind of put a sprinkle across the top and work it in the ground a little?
Well, no. Don't put any on the top. Don't put any on the leaves. Just take a little bit and sprinkle it around the base of the plant.
Oh, okay.
Like quarter of a teaspoon. That's how much.
Okay. Now, the same thing for boysenberries.
Now, boysenberries are a little bit bigger, and they can take a little bit more, but the same process that I just explained to you will be adequate for the boysenberries. Anything that bears fruit, Again, it's a low nitrogen, high phosphorus, not high, but a medium phosphorus and potassium formulation. And depends on the size of the plant. If you got a boysenberry plant that's 4 feet tall, 4 feet wide, you can give it a half a handful and it'd be fine. It could accept that. But if it's a small, newly planted one, again, be very, very stingy on the fertilizer.
Okay, very good. Thank you much. Appreciate it.
Well, you're sure welcome. Thank you for the call. Happy planting.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, we're doing the varieties of...
Oh, yeah, the varieties of examples of how do you pull weeds. Well, yeah. I hate to pull them. I do pull them, but I hate to pull them. One, of course, and some people will go for this and some people won't, but spraying is a less strenuous and does a good job if it's done slowly and correctly. Mm-hmm. And Roundup is my favorite poison because it only kills what you spray. You don't put it on the plants, and you spray very carefully around the plant or in the cracks of the sidewalk or the driveway or wherever. And Roundup does not hurt the soil. It doesn't contaminate the soil. What it does when it hits the weeds, it just grows. It grows right into the plant itself and speeds up the plant so it has a premature death, if you will. And on a day like today, it's perfect for spraying Roundup. There's sunshine, there's warmth, and no wind. And you'll see a marked difference within a week. And within 2 weeks, they'll probably be totally gone.
Quick acting.
It's quick acting. And just, do all the precautions. Don't think you can wipe your hands with it or anything like that. Wear gloves and use a good sprayer, that kind of thing, and follow the directions on the bottle. It's
real simple. Use common sense.
Well, there is common sense. It's just that the government doesn't think we have any, which is totally false. Okay.
Yes.
But that's my political thing for today.
Okay.
But it only kills what you spray. And Roundup, and like I say, grows the weed to death. It just, it's like, whoom, from 0 to 90 in a day or two. And so that gives it a very short life. For most effective kill, like I said earlier, it's to spray on a sunny day like today. Today is warm, today is sunny. We actually did 2 spraying jobs today for 2 of my clients. And, it's not going to get washed off, it's not going to get rained on, and, they're actively growing, and bang, that's too bad.
Take this.
But there are other sprays on the market, but I found that Roundup to be most effective in the landscape. It's good to use. I've tried others from time to time, and I did not like the effects. I didn't like the timeline and that kind of thing. And I've been using Roundup for 40 plus years, for crying out loud, and I still got both my arms and my eyes and legs.
So you know of what you speak.
Yeah, I do. And like I say, if you're not sloppy with doing it, just make sure that you follow directions and get her done.
Hey, can we take a break?
We can take a break. I've got more solutions here for
you.
Let's take a break.
Right back with a caller. News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show.
Here we go.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All righty, we are back with Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, and thank you, caller, for holding through the break. You're on the air with Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hey, I'm calling because I have 4 beautiful young trees that have been planted in the back, and one of them is an Alberta cherry. And I noticed yesterday that there's a lot of red ants on that tree specifically. Don't see any aphids. Not sure what to do about it.
Huh. And describe what you're seeing again.
little red ants going up and down the Alberta cherry tree.
And they're just going up and down. Are they eating anything that you can see?
And I don't see them doing that, but there's more coming. So I don't know if it's been planted where there are a lot of, there's an actual ant problem underneath the ground, because the other trees don't have it. They don't have the ants on them.
Have you looked around the base of the tree and seen if you can see where they're coming from? Are they like out of a hole or something?
I did not see that. No, I have not, to answer that question.
Well, what I would do, at the very least, what I would do is get some ant poison and put it all around the base of the tree to stop them from going up the stem. And then just take a, and before you do that, though, take a hose and just spray all the ants off the tree. Just, you know, high-pressure hose, and just wash the tree clean, put the hose down, and then put the ant poison around the base of it. And that should be enough to stop them.
Yeah, because I thought it was weird that they were red ants. I mean, I don't know. I'd be happy to do that, and I thank you for that, sir.
Well, if it works, call me back, will you?
Yes, I will.
Okay,
actually, I'll do that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. All righty.
Okay, well, I was talking about those glorious weeds that are popping up all over the sidewalks and backyards of Douglas County.
Your favorite.
Yeah, my favorite. Yeah, I love them, man. like I said, we did two spray jobs today already. But anyway, and I talked about spraying, and like I say, the last thing I want to say, for the most effective kill, spray on a day like today. Sunny, warm, no wind, it's perfect, so... If you have a gravel driveway or a gravel parking area out around your place, I really like to burn the weeds.
I've got
a propane tank with a long-handled burner on it, and we do this at several of our clients' places because they have large parking areas in gravel, and those stinking weeds, they just keep coming up in the gravel. So one of my guys loves it, so I crank up that blowtorch and go and just torch those weeds.
Burn, baby, burn.
Yeah, burn, baby, burn. And not only are you burning the weeds, because you're pretty close to the surface there, if there's any weed seed in there around it, you're also penetrating, you're probably penetrating the gravel and hopefully killing some of the seed at
the
same
generation.
Time. Yeah, because a lot of times when you spray, most of the time when you spray, you're spraying the plant and it's dying. That's not a problem. Mm. But there's always weed seed in the ground. Always. I mean, they remain dormant till the time is right, and then they pop up. And I have some maintenance clients that we have to spray, spray or burn, probably four times a year. Easy, because you know you got it, it's clean, I mean it looks good, it's done, and you go back in another, you know, we're there weekly, and about the third week after you've done it, or the fourth week, you go, what do you mean? Well, they're coming back again.
Little babies.
Yeah, probably. Little teeny babies coming up. So, you crank it up again and spray them, you know, again. Spray them again or burn them again. I like the burning part.
I do, too.
That's definite.
You know you've done it.
You can see it happen, baby. I know it sounds cruel, but.
Nah.
Know. Okay.
That's us, Douglas County.
But. Fire doesn't hurt the gravel, okay?
Oh, okay.
But never burn weeds growing in bark mulch, ever. Don't ever do that. Because what'll happen, and you can't see it, and I've experienced this, the bark mulch doesn't usually catch on fire, but the heat, if you're doing that, the heat will go down underneath the surface, and it'll start to smolder in there, and you won't see any flames, you won't see any smoke, but if you ignore it, that smoldering, slow-spreading black fire goes all the way through your bark mulch. And I've seen that happen. And first time I ever saw it happen, we were landscaping Mercy Hospital way back in 1976, when they were building the thing, and we're in there landscaping. And we had a lot of bark around there. It was just the big main buildings and stuff. And it was a lot of bark. And we had a sod lawn in one area, and it was ringed in bark, a pretty good-sized bed of bark, probably 12 feet wide, and ran along the building. And one of my guys went by and says, hey, the bark is smoking. And what are you talking about? So we went over there, and sure enough, it was smoking. And then we started to clear, you know, rake it and clear it away.
Yeah.
It all underneath, the bark on top was not burning, but all underneath it was burning.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, and it had spread about 5 feet. And it, what had happened is one of the other construction workers that were building the building threw a cigarette, a lit cigarette out there.
Oh.
And, you know, just throw it in the bark, right?
Sure.
You know, bingo. So we
not smart.
I never found out which one did it, but we certainly reported it to the construction company supervisor. Say, hey, look, this is what happened.
Yep.
Tell your people not to smoke around this stuff, man. It was frightening, huh?
Well,
Brand new hospital, and it's going to burn down because somebody threw a cigarette butt in the bark. Oh, geez.
Yeah, ding dong.
Don't do that, man. Oh, golly. So anyway, I gave you the three solutions to weeds. You can pick them, you can spray them, or burn them. But do it when the weeds are small and haven't taken over your yard, or you're in for a lot of work. And you can, of course, hire it done. There might be some crazy teenage kid around there who wants to, earn some money, and they've never actually done that kind of work before. And they might last 2 or 3 days. I don't know.
Yeah.
Usually after the third day, they go, man, I don't want to do this anymore.
Because
no. when you're pulling weeds, you can't just pull the top off. You got to pull the roots.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Otherwise, them puppies, if you just snap the top.
You're just helping them.
You're just pruning them. They're going, whoa, yeah, man, thank you. And they push back up again.
Hey, there's sunlight.
Oh, gosh. Well, anyway, this morning, getting to the weather, I was going to say talk about it earlier. This morning, I got out there, and my temperature gauge on my front porch read 27 degrees.
Oh, mama.
Yeah, that's 5 degrees below freezing.
Yes.
27, and it's on the porch, a covered.
Enclosed.
Well, it's not enclosed, but it's covered. There's a roof over the porch, and it's on one of the timbers there, and... I go, wow, 27, great. That's about the 15th day in a row it's been that way.
Hmm.
It's gotten as low as 23 out at my place this year. And
that is chilly.
So, anyway, this leads me into my next segue, which I've already spoken about probably 2 or 3 times, but I want to keep reminding people out there, if you're listening, it makes me wonder how many people have planted their small vegetable starts that they've gotten at the box stores. It seems all the box stores are selling veggies in small plastic containers. You know, there's not much root, not much container, there's not much soil.
Not much protection.
No protection. Zero protection for new tomatoes or peppers or squash or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, these plants that you see at these box stores out there have been grown in heated greenhouses under ideal conditions. And then you come out and stick them in the cold, wet ground with a nighttime temperature of 27 degrees Fahrenheit. That's not it's not considered vibrant growth, okay? I mean, it's not conducive to vibrant growth. It's just not... if they live, they're going to struggle a long time.
Culture shock.
Culture shock, right. So wait a few more weeks, and you'll have much better results. In fact, I don't plant my garden until May every year because we sell when we do get it. We don't even have our veggies in yet. We're waiting another week. Hopefully these cold morning temps will, you know, get over the hump. And then we have them semi-protected, so they're not out in the frost where you look at Bi-Marts or, you know, any of them. And they're out there in the parking lot, you know, all these trays of veggie plants and flowers and stuff. And they're, like I say, there's no protection.
Yeah, just asking for it.
Yeah, and you get a few more 27-degree mornings, and guess what? That thing doesn't exist. Or the person that doesn't know but sees the plants for sale, time to get my garden started. They take them home, dig a hole in their garden, maybe they got the garden prepped and everything, and stick them in, and then water them. I mean, it's like double damage there because it's weak already from the cold, and then if you give it too much moisture, then it really zaps them. So be real, consider the weather. It's And like I say, when we plant ours in May, and the reason I plant them in May is we sell, you know, all through April and even into May. But we got a lot of leftover tomatoes that are, you know, long and they're ugly, so people won't buy them. But they grow tomatoes, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
So we'll take the tomatoes or the peppers or whatever we have. And if the first or second week in May, that's when we plant them. We'll shoot by July, 4th of July, we're getting produce, we're getting tomatoes, we're getting peppers, we're getting all that. So, and they're growing like wild things. and the more you pick, the more they grow. And so it's okay to get a late start. I've started gardens as late as the middle of July and had good success clear into September and even into October. So just because they're out there doesn't mean you have to buy them.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you have to get on it because, you know, a week from now, it could be raining really cold and then have another cold snap after that. And all your work and your money that you invested, you got to redo it. You got to do it again. So
a lot of money wasted.
Yeah, there is a lot of money wasted. So normally I'll skip to the more pleasant stuff now, I hope. And if you have a phone and you want to call 673-4464, we can talk about ants climbing up your tree or premature planting on vegetables or how big does an oak tree grow in 2 years, you know, anything like that if you have a question about it.
And with that, can we take a break?
We can take a break.
All right. How well is your oak tree growing?
They grow good all the time. You can't kill an oak tree.
We'll be back in a couple of minutes with more of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All righty, like he says, we're back with Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show. Last check, it was a beautiful 73 degrees.
It's still 73?
I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be 78, though, unless it's I'm parked in the parking lot. So in the parking lot, it'll probably be 78. As soon as I get out on the road, and it'll drop down.
About 58.
Yeah, 58 and a half. Oh, golly. Anyway, I've been talking about destroying weeds and how to do them in three different ways. Talked about the giant tulip festival in Woodburn that's ongoing right now. And also, I've got some info here on some trees that you may have not considered growing in your yard, or they're not what you call a lot of them growing here in Douglas County. But I'm talking about olive trees. And when you think of olive trees, you think of warmer climates, California, you know, different desert regions and things like that. They're a dry land tree for the most part, and they're pretty tough. They need some irrigation when you're going. But normally you can't grow an olive tree in Oregon because our climate in the winter takes a dip. And they don't like extreme temps, like 32 degrees and below. But and I learned this the hard way because I was in California coming back from a baseball game from Bakersfield College or something, where my son was playing at the time. And there's this place in Corning, California, somewhere near Redding, I'm not sure. But it's called the Olive Pit. And it's a big old store, and all it has is olive trees and 15,000 different types of olives in jars that you can buy, from giant olives to teeny olives and all. Everything's olives, okay? So I stopped. I wanted to see what it was all about. So I stopped, and they had these olive plants for sale, little tiny guys. And I thought, man, that's cool. I like that. So I bought a little olive tree. It was, you know, like 6 inches tall or 7 inches tall, anyway, I took it back to Oregon and planted it in a little pot, and I thought, well, this is great. And it was summertime, and late spring, early summer, and it grew really well, and I was real proud of it, learning all about how olives grow. And I made the mistake of leaving it outside. And we had one of those freako cold snaps that come down out of the Arctic Circle, you know, where it's like 70 or 60 one day, and then that night it drops to 20.
Up around Alaska, up in that?
Right down here in Douglas County.
No, I mean the front.
They come down from that Arctic Circle.
They wanted to share it with us.
Yeah, have some cold weather. Cool your guys. Cool your jets, boys. Anyway, my olive tree was toast.
Oh.
I mean, it was gone. And I put it in the greenhouse. I thought, you know, and I'd forgotten it. Usually I'd put it in the greenhouse at night and let it catch, you know, it'd be fine. Because even on the coldest days, it only gets down to about 39 in the greenhouse. So it's good.
Yeah.
But it was toasted. There was no way it was coming back. So I thought, so I did some research.
Mm-hmm.
And in that research, I found an olive tree that will live through the winter cold here in Oregon. Yeah, it's okay. So I bought one, just one, and it was kind of good size, you know, 3 feet tall and all that. And I bought it from a nursery here in Oregon. So hey, what the heck?
Yeah.
And this was called the Black Spanish Olive, and it sounds good. It did. It has black olives, and from Spain actually, and they are a beautiful tree, and they're evergreen. In other words, they don't lose their leaves in the winter. And their leaves are kind of long and pointed and kind of a light bluish-green color to them. And they also produce black olives, which are grown mainly for olive oil, but you can also eat them and if you like black olives.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like here in Oregon, there is a real demand for the olive oil. And then after I got started doing this, I found out there was a guy in Glide up one of those roads off the beaten path that planted 7,000 of these black Spanish olives in.
Wow.
And has a olive orchard. I don't know what they're called, orchards or I don't think they're vineyards, but groves, olive groves.
Oh, there you go. That sounds good.
And I thought 7,000 of them. So right away, I go up to Glide looking for this place.
Yeah.
And they said what road it was on, and I went all the way to the end of this road, but there was a big gate.
Oh.
And no signs or anything, but the gate was closed, and no houses. And so I know not to open somebody's gate and just drive in. So I turned around and I came back, and I didn't see any olive trees. But later I was reading about this guy. There was another article on him. And I found out after, I think it was about, 5 years, he had gotten his first olive oil crop and had sold or bottled up 720 pints of pure olive oil and shipped them to different retailers here in the state of Oregon, the farm and garden type places, and was doing real well. But this black Spanish olive, I have planted them in landscapes. One I planted down at Redeemer's Church down there on Looking Glass Road. When I planted it, when we did the landscaping there years ago, I think 10 years ago, I planted two of them, one in a smaller bed and one in a kind of out by itself in a different area. And the one is probably 12 feet tall now.
Wow.
And it blooms little white fragrant flowers and a very attractive tree. Like I say, it's an evergreen, so it's always got the leaves on it.
Mm.
And it's not a thick foliage type. You can see through it. I mean, it's very airy, I guess you could say. But it's a beautiful tree. It has a nice form to it. We haven't done hardly any pruning to it because we take care of the place as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the one I planted out near the parking lot, we just kind of let it go and see what's going to happen. And we've kind of pruned it just to see, to have two different examples of what you can do with the same tree in different locations. And
see what happens.
See what happens so that you can actually talk knowledgeably to someone who wants one and say, yeah, try this. This is a good one. I don't know that. But these black Spanish olives will grow. they, by the book, 15 or 20 feet eventually, but they're slow growers. They don't just shoot right up there. And from the research I did on them, they suggest fairly consistent pruning, so they don't just keep sprouting up, but they stay, you know, in that 10-12 foot category, so that your produce, your olives, et cetera, are down low, just like I talk about when we're talking about pruning fruit trees and
right.
stuff. Keep it down and keep it easy.
Yeah,
and
that's their range.
Yeah. And anyway, they're doing well all
nice.
Over. And I don't know. I haven't heard any word on. I'm going to try to go up there and see this Olive Garden in Glide one of these days. And what I like about these black Spanish olives, they can take low temperatures up to 22 degrees Fahrenheit.
They're tough little brothers.
Yeah, and that's the only one I know that will take that kind of cold.
Yeah.
So they're very cold. They're the coldest tolerant of the olive varieties. And like I said, it originates in Catalonia, Spain. I have no idea where Catalonia is, but anyway. And like I said earlier, the blossoms are fragrant in the spring. And like I said, they just produce a boatload of olives. And by the way, you pick the olives in the winter. It's not, you know, late fall, early winter, you know, about November, December.
Yeah.
And you only need one olive tree because they're self-fertile. They don't need another tree to pollinize like a lot of different fruit trees do.
That's interesting.
So, yeah, so that's just if you wanted only one in your yard, in your front yard, so people could go by and say, what in the world is that kind of tree? You know, and then all of a sudden in the fall they see these black olives hanging all over it. So, but if any of you have read the classics, there was a guy named Homer, and he was a Greek poet, and he described olive oil as liquid gold and for a variety of reasons. You can use it on your skin, you can use it on wounds, you can use it on sunburn, you can cook with it. I don't know about drinking it, but
I tried it.
You did?
Yeah, at one of the restaurants I worked at. It's bitter. It's not.
Is it? Yeah. Oh, okay. I haven't even been tempted to try it. I mean,
it looks good.
Yeah,
it
does.
Good.
It looks good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and pure and wholesome and all that. but
that's deceiving.
Yeah, very deceiving. Okay, and here's a flashback. It's too cold to plant your veggies. But there's another tree that is also a fruit producer, but it has to be protected from cold weather. And there's a few of them that I'm going to talk about.
Okay.
And this one is called the Dwarf Meyer Lemon. It makes a great potted plant for the patio in the summer and in the living room all winter. I've killed my first one that was given to me by my botany professor in college 100 years ago. And it was a big one, beautiful. And it was in this great big redwood box. And it took three men to pick it up. That's how heavy it was.
Oh, my gosh.
So I had it at the nursery and outside all summer. And we put it in the greenhouse for the winter. Well, a couple of years went by, and we had one of those freak freezing things where the temperature just dropped down to almost zero. And the olive tree, the lemon tree was outside, and it got just toasted. I mean, it was beautiful. It was 3 feet tall, 3 feet wide.
Oh, what a shame.
We'd get a whole bag of lemons off it every year.
It was
gorgeous and very fragrant when it was blooming. It was just a beautiful tree. And because I wasn't watching or the weather, or there was no prediction that this is going to happen, you know, I just left it out there. We'll put it away within a week. Well, that didn't work. But anyway, if you get a Dwarf Meyer lemon, like I said, it's a great potted plant for the patio, or it's a nice living room tree all winter long. It loves the sun, and it's going to produce great lemons for consumption. They are beautiful. They are very tasty. We've got some in our greenhouse right now that Oh, gosh, it might have a dozen lemons on it at this point. And when we need a lemon, we just go in there and pick one. But it's the mama plant, so we take cuttings off this mama plant and we propagate more.
Right.
We have some small ones. We have in 1 gallon cans. They're about 12 inches tall. And even, it's amazing, they're a strong little tree. I've had a 12-inch Meyer lemon tree with four or five lemons on it. And they were bending the branches clear to the ground practically, but never broke and grew fine.
It was real flexible.
Very flexible. You know, I mean, it was disproportionate fruit to the size of the tree. But that's how prolific these guys are.
Yeah.
And like I say, minimal care and you'll have lemons year-round. I mean, that's how it grows because there's no, quote, season for them. They just do it when they feel like doing it And if if the sun's rays hit them just right, then they produce flowers, and then the lemons come on after that. Also, this is an evergreen, and like I said, the flowers are just knockout fragrant, and it's the Meyer lemon is disease free according to the books I've read.
Nice.
And I thought, disease free? How do you get a disease free tree in the United States of America? But and like I said, they bear the fruit at an early age and very, very juicy and very, very good. We got a break?
We do.
Okay, I'll be back. Trust me.
All right. More lemon talk.
Yeah. Oh, I got other trees.
In just a moment, Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show right here. News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All righty, we still have a couple of minutes. You can call and ask Mike just about anything regarding
plants, yards, gardens, trees, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know anything about electronics or this machine that I'm sitting at. That's why Dale's here pushing all the buttons, and there's at least 100 buttons here to push.
Now, there are quite a few.
Yeah,
yes.
And there's no way I even want to learn it, okay? And I got a flip phone for y'all. Just a flip phone. I don't do any of that other stuff. So
you don't have.
I don't even know
what they're called anymore.
I don't either. I was thinking of getting one of them old timers phones where they got a big display thing and they got a button that says Facebook on it or talk.
Yeah.
You know. I thought, man, that's my speed right there. I don't want to have to learn all this stuff. I got too much in my head now.
Yeah, and everything every day there's something else.
Yeah, I don't have any room for more technology in my head. But one thing I learned from, I was talking about got a phone call. Okay.
We have a phone call. You're on the air with Mike Winters.
Hi, you guys. Appreciate you so much.
Hello. What's your question, sir?
A couple of things, Mike. One of the things you can do with that ant thing, and I don't know that it's even a problem per se versus just some ants crawling around on a tree, but you know that boric acid is what kills ants. That's there's the little trap things that you can buy like at the farm co-op called Terra, and you can put them on your kitchen counter for those vinegar ants. And anyway, if she bought a couple of those Terras, or if she bought some boric acid and put it in some juice or some soda pop around the tree, all the ants would pile into that soup and kill themselves.
You say they're attracted to it.
Absolutely.
Oh,
like heroin.
like heroin. Well, I've got no experience there.
Oh, honey, I don't either, but the ants fight themselves to get to it. That's what I'm getting at.
Well, good. Where do you buy the boric acid?
I think at the farm co-op and also possibly at grocery stores.
That's where
I've gotten it in the past, but I haven't bought it in a long time, Mike.
Oh, it's probably illegal by now. Well, thank you, John, for that good information. I'll remember that, and what I'll do is I'll go to the co-op and take a look myself.
Well, and the Terra is absolutely—it's a little commercial product, you know, when you get those little vinegar ants crawling around your kitchen counters, you just put that out there, and what they do, Mike, is they they carry the boric acid back to their nest, uh-huh. and they commit suicide with it.
Oh, good. Well, I'll keep that in mind, sir. Thank you for the call,
yes,
John.
All righty. Thank
Appreciate
you.
You're a blessing as always. Thanks,
okay.
guys.
Thank Bye. You. Bye-bye. How much time I got left here?
3 minutes.
Three minutes. Okay. Yeah. I'll see if I can squeeze this in 3 minutes. Otherwise, it's a next week thing. let's see. Oh, my gosh. I was looking at what I was going to be talking about here. And, oh, the Meyer Lemon, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there's a client I did a job for a few years ago. And he bought a Meyer Lemon from me, oh, gosh, years prior. And I went over to do, we put a new lawn for him. And he was watching us and said, hey, you want to see that lemon tree that you sold me a few years back? I said, well, sure, yeah. And we walked over to the other side of his driveway, a big wide driveway, and there was a homemade greenhouse with a lemon tree inside of it, and the lemon tree was planted in the ground, and it was about at least 8 feet tall and about 6 feet wide, and it must have had half a pickup load of lemons on it.
Oh, my gosh.
And what he did, wow. he built a wooden structure, and then he put plexiglass windows in all the way around. Uh-huh. Most of it was glass. And when it got cold in the winter, he just put the windows on, and he had light bulbs hanging in there for heat to keep
clever.
The frost off.
Yeah.
And as soon as it got to spring, he turned the light off, opened the windows, and the tree grew. And I thought, what a cool thing.
Yeah.
I haven't done that yet, but it was a huge, huge tree. Like I say, at least 8 feet tall. Mm. And more lemons than you could eat in 10 years, I think. And he really liked it, did a good job, and I learned a lot. I learned a lot from that.
That's clever, but, yeah.
Yeah, and so I asked him questions about, you know, watering and fertilizing and all that, and he just, no problem. It just grows. When it gets cold, I put the windows back on and heat it with light bulbs, and okay. And the size of the greenhouse was about 8 by 10, you know, something like that. It wasn't huge, it was very simple. the roof was probably the most complicated because it was up in the air. You had to use a ladder to get there, but it was amazing. So actually, you can grow any citrus fruit here in Douglas County, as long as it's protected during the winter months. That's all it needs is winter month protection. Mm-hmm. So think tangelo, grapefruit, limes, oranges. I have an orange tree, by the way, at the nursery, a big one, that I'm trying to propagate little ones with. And is that the mean I'm cut off?
Yes, that's it.
Okay, well, I hope you enjoyed it. I did, and I'll see you next Wednesday with your questions. Thank you for listening.
We'll probably continue with lemon trees.
Yes. Lemons and oranges and limes.
All that good stuff. All right. Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome.